championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Darius Terrell. As always, you guys listen to the Hornscast channel, which you can find on any podcasting platform out there. Today we're going to be going over everything that happened in the bye week, talk a lot of recruiting, talk about the meetings, the personal meetings that Tom Herbin had with the freshmen and the team, talk about Kansas State as Texas faces them coming up this Saturday, what are the keys to the game, and joined by the Boscos boys to talk about the Kansas State Wildcats. Darius, how'd you take in your bye week?
I took in my bye week drinking a lot of orange juice, trying to sit in saunas. I'm a little bit under the weather still. Y'all try to bear with me. Let's try to get through this, but I've been going through it.
Just sitting in the shower?
I've been there. Cowboys won last night, even though I didn't get to see the end because I was unconscious.
You passed out.
I was out.
Did you at least see the cat? That was maybe the most I've
cheered. I saw the cat. Yep.
Maybe the most I've cheered in a while during a Cowboys game.
Yeah, and they won. It was a black cat, and they still won, right? But no, I passed out, and then I woke up. It was like 16-15. I was like, oh, that's probably good. I've been missing this. And then I was out. But yeah. Glad they pulled it out.
Yeah, yeah. Still, I'm salty with the NFL, so let's not get into there. Let's go ahead and break down the recruiting, though, or in the bye week. So a lot happened in the recruiting world over this bye week because there's a lot of uncertainty in the program, as we went over in our last podcast. If you haven't listened to that, please go and give that a listen. It's well worth it. So with that being said, with all the uncertainty, Texas lost three commitments. They lost Princely Mamielin, Ethan Pouncey, and Joshua Eaton. So before we get into them and what the story is behind them and all that, let's go ahead and answer this question first. Because this is what I've been seeing a lot from fans of other programs, from coaches and everything. Are things as bad or dire as they look on the recruiting front for Texas, Darius?
In my opinion, no, absolutely not. I think folks or people that have opinions that don't follow the program as closely as we do. Of course, from the outside, you see multiple decommitments in a week, you know, three in a 10, 11 day span. Okay. Oh my goodness. You know, red flags are up. The ship is sinking. At the same time, and again, before we get into, you know, each and every one of those guys, two of those guys were, two of the most recent commitments. And I feel like, you know, in a way they had a little bit of a timetable on them. But, at the same time, again, it's the University of Texas. People are going to always, especially opponents, you know, they're going to negative recruit Texas and always going to want the narrative to be that something negative is going on because they're going to need all the help they can get. Because at the end of the day, when Texas is going good, when things are good with Texas, it makes it that much harder on everybody else. So at the same time, you know, there are negative things out there that you hear, but I think you need to also take into account, you know, who it's coming from.
Well, right. But also on the same note, as we reported on the Football Brainiacs, and I believe it's already been put out in our open posts, There are players inside the program who have been negatively recruiting Texas. And it's been pretty heavy. What do you make of that as a former player?
There was a situation when I was at Texas, when I was there present, when there was, at the time, there was no more recruit in the country that was in there visiting us. Only, if you remember the name, Dorial Green Beckham. We were going to play Kansas State.
Who?
Yeah, he's like, you know, I'm talking to you about 6'5", 6'6", you know, great looking dude. But, yeah, there was a particular player that, you know, he straight up told him, hey, you don't want to come here. And, a few other guys, you know, didn't really know what to say. But, one of those guys ended up going back and telling Coach Brown. And, you know, at the end of the day, as soon as the regular season was over, you know, that guy was out of there. You know, he made sure that, he transferred and he was gone. I don't know how common it is. It's definitely not anything you want to hear as a recruit. You know, as a recruit, you want to go in and you're going to ask the players, you know, what their opinions are, the coaches. You know, of course, you're going to always get the sunshine and lollipops when they're recruiting you, but they want to know what it's really like. And if guys are unhappy, I don't see any way that it can be a positive if guys are unhappy and there are going to be guys coming in, basing their decisions off what current players' opinions are. No doubt that's a reason for concern.
Yeah, you never want any guys on your current team negatively recruiting you. That's happening. it happens a lot more often than probably people think, but the fact that it was so present over the past week probably made it seem for guys like Princely Mumyelen, Ethan Pouncey, Joshua Eaton, that things are a lot more unstable with the program, because honestly, they are. They're a lot more unstable than they were, what, 2 weeks ago, before the week before Oklahoma. We probably would never have seen this really coming. With all this uncertainty, it looks bad, but it's not as bad on the recruiting front. Now, recruiting front is a game of momentum, and right now the momentum is probably not going in Texas's favor. In fact, it is not. It is not going in Texas' favor. There's no probably about it. But it's one of those things where it can swing very, very quickly in the very opposite way, given enough time.
Oh, yeah, let's go ahead. I mean, so talking about all negative momentum, things like that, let's look at the three guys. So starting with Princely, I was under the impression that his main issue was Texas's three down front. He wants to be in a four down front where he can, in his mind, have an opportunity to get after the passer, even though that might not necessarily be what his strengths ultimately end up being. He was playing a four down front. Texas has been in a three down front about 85-90% of the time. So I think that played the biggest part in Princely decommitting.
And on top of that, he wanted to be a sack guy. And according to Ian Boyd, Texas has had 16 sacks, and two of them are beat by defensive linemen. That is the fewest in the Big 12.
To counter that, though, I mean, last season, Charles Amenahu led the Big 12 in sacks and things like that. So, I mean, it goes on a year-by-year basis. I think with a guy like Princely, I don't think he was ever all the way fully in. I think he was looking for a reason to be able to decommit and open things back up. With a guy like Josh Eaton, I like Josh Eaton. I think he's a talented prospect. I do think he's raw. I do think there's a down year in the state at his position, which may have made him a little bit more of a priority than he would be in previous years. But the same thing with Eaton, I don't think he was ever fully, I think he committed because he felt like he needed to secure a spot, you know, otherwise they were going to move on from him. And then once he committed and he's there and he sees things going on, and now Oklahoma loses a commitment from Ryan Watts, now they have a spot open, and oh, well, let's start showing Josh Eaton some more attention. He now has another option that he previously didn't really have, even though he was still listing them. So I think that's what played the biggest part of him opening his things back up. Pouncey is one that hurts.
That's the worst one of the three.
Right. You know, not to make it sound like sour grapes, but I mean, again, I like Eaton. I think he's a solid prospect, but I don't think he was irreplaceable. Princely hurts because he's a defensive lineman. You want all the D-line talent you can get.
Especially again, those who are close to home. You don't want to lose a guy who is right down the road.
Right. But he's not a can't-miss talent.
Exactly.
Per se.
Yeah.
Not compared to a guy like Alfred Collins.
Yes.
Example.
Night and day.
Right. But Ethan Pouncey was a guy whose tape I loved. I thought it was a little bit weird getting his commitment and it popping up kind of out of the blue like it did, because his brother Jordan, even though he haven't heard anything about him being unhappy, he hadn't really been playing, you know?
Oh, he had been happy at Texas. He had joined the Silver Spurs.
Right.
He was enjoying life at Texas, but not as a football player.
Yeah, at the end of the day, if you love ball, you love football, you still want to play. You want an opportunity to show what you can do. And I don't think he was ever going to get that on offense here. It's mainly just going to be special teams and things like that. So when you start hearing rumblings about him looking to enter the transfer portal, it makes sense then for Ethan Pouncey to announce his decommitment. Of course, they're brothers. You know, you would think they want to play, regardless of what they say, they want to play together. The family would want them to play together because it makes everything easier on them. And to be fair about Pouncey, Ethan Pouncey's not playing this year at Winter Park. He's out for the year with a shoulder injury that does require surgery that he has not had yet. So he was going to be coming in, even though he's coming in the spring as an early enrollee, he was going to have to get that surgery. So he's going to miss the spring anyway. He's a little bit freshman season is a little bit in question due to the shoulder injury and the nature of it. I believe it's a torn labrum. That's a big deal. Same injury Gary Gilbert had.
Same injury I had.
Yeah,
still
so
feeling
it's,
it.
It's a yeah. It's,
but you know, I definitely didn't do as much hard rehab as those guys are going to do.
Right,
but
he's a little bit of a risk, you know, with that injury, you know, and with it being damaged as long as it has been. Of course, yeah, it's three commitments that were lost. It doesn't look good on the hoof. You know, it's not good. You don't want to lose anybody. But at the same time, there's a little bit of a story behind each and every one of them outside of just, oh, it's negative things going on in the locker room. I think that was a little bit of a coincidence.
Right. And I think there was a little bit of a overlap here. Those guys, two of them, Ubamyalin and Eaton, were the least stable of the commitments. And the fact that there was a little more instability, it was like the top two most unstable blocks on the Jacob Tower falling off.
Right. The two guys most looking for the reason to have an excuse, yeah.
Exactly.
That's what it seems like.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I think when we talked about Eaton and we talked about Ubamyalin in this show, I might go back and find these quotes later on. But I think we both said, I think I said the best parts of these commitments were the fact that they took them from A&M. And that was probably the best thing.
That's fair. It don't seem like either one of them going to end up at A&M now.
Yeah, but they're probably going to end up across the river in Oklahoma. So
that's fine.
Yeah. Oh, you know, yeah, here's the thing is they're both project guys. They both could turn out to be problems. But from what I saw watching Ubamyalin live against a much, you know, an inferior opponent, from what I've seen in Joshua Eaton's tape, those two guys have a lot to work on. So it's not like you're losing anything immediately that you can't replace.
I agree.
Right. So then it seems like all of this dire talk and this bad talk are a little overblown. It's still not great on the recruiting front. Let's not get us wrong here. Let's not sunshine pump too much. But it's not as bad as people are making it out to be. For instance, Texas just got a commitment out of Hutto wide receiver and defensive back, DeJohn Harrison. Darius, what are we getting out of DeJohn Harrison?
From everything I understand from what Harrison's being brought in as an athlete. I think his position where he starts at is contingent upon another guy joining the class, maybe a guy like Kelvonte Dixon. Right now, without Dixon in the class right now, we're thinking we're projecting him to play slot receiver when he first gets on campus. I have a write-up that comes out on him tomorrow, either tomorrow or the day after. Harrison's a former TCU commit, but instantly when you pop on his tape from this year, he got some mid-season highlights up from his senior year. He's got some terrific short area quickness and burst that frankly Texas is lacking still on their roster right now. I don't think he has great long speed, okay, but as far as making guys miss in short quarters, being shifty, making something out of nothing, he definitely has that ability. He shows some ability as a route runner too. And he ran back a few kicks on that tape as well. He's a playmaker. The guy he reminds me of is a guy Texas just saw last week or the week before that, and that was Tay Barber. I think he's that kind of athlete if he's able to reach his potential. And so I think it's something to get excited about. He's not a guy that's ranked high right now or anything like that, but he was previously committed to TCU. Baylor was looking at him hard. Those are two programs that typically don't get guys that are rated as high as the guys Texas gets, but they always do a great job with their evaluations of finding twitchy, athletic guys that are explosive, and they tend to give Texas all they can handle when they see them. So I'm happy about this pickup, and he's a local guy. And he has the ability to play defense if need be. He can play cornerback.
Right. There's not going to be that story of, they missed this guy who was right down the road and he ended up at TCU. That just seems to hurt the Longhorns as much as it does.
Right.
You have now a guy who is pretty shifty, who can hurt you in multiple ways. He has that wonderful short burst of speed that allows a guy to make guys miss in a phone booth. That's what you're getting out of him, and some versatility in his position. Because Texas just lost two cornerbacks, right? Ethan Pouts is going to hurt a lot. You need a guy who can potentially replace him. And that's what you're getting out of DeJohn Harrison. And also, don't forget, you still have Keaton Crawford in this class so far. And he's probably one of my favorite cornerbacks in this class.
I like Keaton Crawford a lot. I think he's got the ability to play inside and out. I think Texas is looking at him to play inside first because he's got those hips. He's got that feet, those type of feet. And Keaton's a guy from East Texas. He's a taller guy. He don't have no ego, man. He's not worried about all this other stuff. I like him. I wish they would get more guys like him.
Right. So you have Keaton Crawford still in the class. You probably need one or two more cornerbacks. You're not getting Keely Ringo. I would not put any money. I would put money on them not getting Keely Ringo at all. That's not happening. So, Darius, what do you think is going to happen when it comes to Texas at corner? What do they do now?
That's a good question. I think on the website on Football Brainiacs, Kareem been reporting Texas has been in contact with Jahdae Barron. I think he's a guy from, is he from Waco or Pflugerville? I think he's a guy that might be from the Austin area. But he's committed to Baylor. He had been talking to Jason Washington on and off. He's one of those, another explosive, athletic guy that seems to bite Texas in the butt. They've been in contact with him. We mentioned that Dajon Harrison is a guy that can play cornerback. He plays cornerback. He plays both ways for Huddle when they need him to, when they face a team with a big-time wide receiver. But I think him switching the defense is contingent upon Texas getting another receiver. It remains to be seen, you know, who the next targets will be. But they definitely seem to be looking to get at least two more guys. And like you said, with Kele Ringo being a bit of a long shot, there are going to be some new names that pop up for sure.
They're going to do two things. They're going to look out of state in places like Georgia, California, Arizona, in places where they already have some roots set down, and start exploring the talent pool there a little bit more and saying, hey, is there anybody we missed here? And then look in state in Texas for guys like Dajon Harrison and like Jahdae Barron, who are, one, under the radar, and two, multiple. Very guys who have a lot of versatility in where they could play, especially Dajon Harrison and guys like Kelvonte Dixon. A lot of guys who you're looking at being either wide receiver or cornerback or some defensive back in general. With that, you're going to have some flexibility in how you use these guys, and also for future classes, because the guys who are your cornerback still, they're just sophomores. You just have Anthony Cook, Deshaun Jameson, you have Jalen Green. Those are all sophomores. Behind them, Kenyatta Watson. And then you also have Keaton Crawford. This next class probably is gonna have a stronger cornerback class. If you can get through this class and really stock up there, that's probably better. Same thing with the offensive line, right? So that is a potential strategy, is get a bunch of guys who are versatile so that you can say to the next class, these guys, you know, they may or may not be cornerbacks here. And if you come in, they could probably go to the wide receiver.
I see what you're saying. You can try to load up for another big DB class like you did with the 2018 group.
Right.
But at the same time, that is so risky, you know, and injuries could happen, transfers could happen, and then next thing you know, you're in a hole. So, right. There will for sure be some new names that pop up. We just got to wait on it to happen.
Right. They're going to have to go digging through some tape now. So let's keep on this track of some positive news here and talk about two linebacker targets that are coming to Texas in the coming weeks. You have Maurice Wren and Jaquandus Burns. So, Darius, let's talk about Jaquandus Burns first from IMG Academy, currently an Ole Miss linebacker commit. What do you think of Jaquandus Burns?
Well, his connections, his familiarity with Texas comes in. Burns was previously, he transferred to IMG from Dallas Skyline. He never got to play at Skyline. He transferred to Skyline in spring from Terrell High School in Terrell, Texas, with the defensive coordinator that came over there. He was ruled ineligible by the UIL. He, another player, and a player in the 2021 class, defensive tackle Keithian Alexander, is going to be a big-time guy. So he's at IMG playing his senior year. He's been committed to Ole Miss for a while, but he did take a visit in the spring to another campus. I believe it was Cal. He's been in constant contact with Texas in the recent months, and he's coming in for a visit. It's an official visit this weekend against Kansas State, and he could be a guy that fills one of the linebacker spots.
Right.
It makes a lot of sense.
And another guy is coming in, Maurice Wren. Used to be originally from Texas, and Texas is kind of going back to where they keep on getting their linebackers, the JUCO ranks. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that's a good idea or a bad idea, hey, that's, you know, I guess we'll see.
Well, Wren is He's a unique case. So 2 years ago, Wren was a, I got to see him up in person. We scrimmaged Mesquite Horn prior to our season 2 years ago, but at DeSoto. But Wren was playing wide receiver. He played wide receiver at Mesquite Horn. He would also line up at defensive end and pass rush situations and outside linebacker. Legitimate 6'2", 6'3". Even at that time, he was 215, 220 pounds. That kid runs a 4.5 40. He was going to Arkansas. I believe Arkansas was going to play him on defense. He decided at the last minute he wanted to play offense. So he decommits late, ends up having to go to Louisiana Tech. He's a bigger talent than a place like that. Apparently ran into some issues there. He transfers from La Tech before he plays, okay, and ends up at Tyler Junior College. And now he's at Tyler Junior College playing defense, and that's where his stock is kind of taken off, and he's been considered on some places the number one defensive JUCO recruit in the nation. Again, 6'3", 230, 235 pounds, 4'5", 40, elite athlete. He's got an older brother, Eric Wren, that plays at Oklahoma. So, he's a guy that, I think if Texas has not offered him yet, but they've been in contact. He's going to be in for an unofficial visit soon. If Texas does decide to make a move there, if things go work out between him and Jaquanis Burns, those are two really athletic linebackers that will be coming in that are long, and it will make that linebacker room look a lot different than it does now.
You're kind of throwing bodies at the problem of your linebacker core right now.
Athletic bodies, though.
Exactly, exactly. So let's go ahead and get to team news here, though. With the past week, we talked about the problems that were happening in the locker room and with the coaching staff and the communication issues that they're happening. One of the things we said that Tom Herman needed to do in the short term was to fix that communication problems, and if he had to do it himself. Well, that's exactly what Tom Herman did. Over the past week, Tom Herman, as we reported on the Football Brainiacs, had individual meetings with different freshmen and different players who were problems. And from what it looks like, the bleeding has stopped temporarily. We'll see what happens because, you know, if things go downhill again, problems probably arise again. But for the time being, it seems like some of the issues, not all of them, have been smoothed over or at least understood between the parties, and things have gone, have plateaued or at least hit the bottom of the valley.
Yeah, to hear that he's having mid-season meetings with multiple freshmen and things like that, that's different to me. I never experienced that when I was at Texas or even at UNT, the coach stopping to have mid-season meetings during the bye week or whatever. When usually when freshmen are going through the freshman blues, they're left on their own to get through that, to figure that out. So if he's having to meet with guys and things like that, it's making me believe that especially I'm looking more so at out-of-state guys, that, you know, maybe some things were reassured to those guys or their families, you know, during the process, and it may not have been happening. You know, we've been seeing tweets about the Texas staff or Tom Herman in particular maybe not keeping his word on some things, which will make me think that maybe there were some promises made to some guys, you know, anything, telling folks whatever they want to hear to get them on campus. And now it's I think that's coming to a head a little bit. That's my theory on what that may be about.
Oh, yeah.
But, if he says,
I think you're hitting it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, cause there's like, I see Marcus Washington get in random playing time, you know, at random parts, you know, Kenyatta Watson got in late in one game. I can't remember. I think it was West Virginia. He got burnt. We haven't seen him since. We saw his dad being vocal on social media talking about promises not being kept, even though in my opinion, he was given chances and he hasn't earned it. He hadn't done very well on punt return, covering gunners, in my opinion. He hasn't looked great when he's been in on defense. He doesn't really deserve to be out there. But that's just an entitlement thing that I think a lot of programs deal with, but Texas deals with it more than most.
Jake Smith?
Yeah, I mean, even Jake Smith. Jake Smith has been playing, you know. He hasn't been playing well recently, but it seems like, you know, I don't know how you can, you know, kind of run on that wheel and try to keep everybody happy while maintaining the integrity of your program with guys still having to earn stuff and trust what you can say, you know, if I bust my butt, the best player is going to play, you know, you start getting involved with those politics, you'll find yourself in some trouble. So, right. I wasn't particularly thrilled to hear about there being meetings, you know, with freshmen and things like that. But, hey, if that's the bet he made, they got to lay in it. So I hope they figure it out, work it out. You know, that's just winning solves a lot of things.
There's two things that you can either look at this as positive and saying, hey, he's getting the communication down. He's getting, you know, a better understanding between some of these guys who are younger, sophomores and freshmen who are having, you know, some issues with the staff. And there's the other side, which is there's a lot of politics happening here, and that's probably not – that could tip it, yeah. and that could potentially be a problem later on.
I can't – I mean, I understand that politics are a part of some things, but you do as a head coach, you know. I mean, guys aren't stupid. Players aren't stupid. You know, you see it at the high school level as well as college, you know, NFL, when they have the team makes a first round draft pick, and the Dallas Cowboys, Taco Charlton, they were starting that guy, trying to keep him on the field, trying to play him, right? Because he was a first round pick. He didn't deserve to be out there, but team made an investment. Politics, we're going to give that guy every chance he can, right? College, 5-star recruit. Maybe he's not panning out. He's not working out well. well, maybe they change his position, you know, different things like that. They keep finding ways to get these guys out there when there are other guys that are better. People can see that. So you lose a little bit. You lose a little bit of your respect as a coach. You know, what you say tends to be cheapened a little bit when you don't, when what you say is not followed up by your actions. Mm-hmm. And I just, that seems to be a little bit of a case of what's on top of other things that may be going on with this program.
And a large part of the reason why all of this stuff started boiling up to the surface after Kansas was the fact that things weren't looking like they were supposed to. You know, you're not supposed to just barely beat Kansas. You're supposed to blow them out of the water. And that made people question, or players on the team question, the process. But the problem with that is the fact of how much Texas was losing, or how much Texas had lost on that defensive side of the ball. We've talked about it. Yes, it's we don't want to make an excuse, but it is a minor reason for why there was a downtick in the Texas defense. It wasn't great before then, but losing all those guys certainly did not help.
It's a real reason. Mm-hmm. And for us, if people, again, that don't follow every little piece and part of the program, they wouldn't know that Texas lost eight starters. They wouldn't know that Texas lost eight starters during this season. I mean, you're basically playing, you're replacing last year's starters and this year's starters. You're playing backups, and people assume all it's University of Texas, not knowing that a lot of those guys that are out there really have no idea what they're doing, or they weren't supposed to be in this position anyway.
Right.
But Texas also doesn't get that benefit of the doubt, right?
Right. So you're getting back guys like Jordan Whittington on the offense side, but more importantly, on the depth chart, you have Caden Stern starting. You have DeMarvian Overshown out there. You have B.J. Foster out there. We already had Jalen Green back, but that was such an improvement last week with Jalen Green out there. We'll see whether or not McCulloch is back on there. And that would be much needed help in that on that linebacker core. So getting all of these players back, especially a guy like Caden Stern, if he is anywhere near full strength, will be a huge boon for this defense coming into this game against Kansas State. Jarius, do you agree that getting all these players back will provide some noticeable benefits for the Longhorns, or do you think that this defense is still going to struggle against the Kansas State Wildcats?
I mean, well, the defense in a way has struggled, you know, all year, but we saw, there's no doubt about it, getting guys back like B.J. Foster, DeMarvian Overshown, Caden Stearns. I mean, if not for anything else, those are three, you know, big time athletes. You become a lot more athletic than you were with whoever the backups were in there. Those are guys with Foster and Stearns particularly that have a ton of experience, you know. I don't see how you don't get better with those guys coming back, right? I think coming into this game, I think you see two programs that, you know, perception wise are going in opposite directions this season. Right now, Kansas State seems to be hitting on all cylinders. Texas seems to be, looking to find themselves. Coming off a bye week, though, if Texas can't answer the bell coming out of this bye week, I'm afraid for what the rest of the season may hold. Even though Kansas State is a damn good team and they're very, very, very well coached by a staff that won a lot of games up in North Dakota State, I think Texas is going to be rough this weekend. I think it's going to be tough.
Right. Let's get into the keys of the game against Kansas State here before we bring on our friend Grant from the Bosco Boys. Let's start with the defense here, since we've been talking about the defense. Darius, what is your first key to the game for this Kansas State, for the defense against Kansas State?
Defensively, so Kansas State does a lot of funky stuff. They run a multiple offense, but pretty much every 100% of the time, they're going to have a tight end on the field in some way, form, or fashion. They use that guy as a H-back, as a fullback. Kansas State wants to get downhill. They want to use a power running game. The first key I would have to say would be stopping the run. Both running backs, starting running back James Gilbert, his backup, Jordan Brown, they're listed as questionable for the game Saturday. The third running back, Harry Trotter, not to be confused with Harry Potter, I believe ran for 100 yards last week.
Like Kansas magic. State,
yeah, and like here's the thing, Kansas State, so I don't bad. Know if he, there's a clip so out on Twitter. There's a clip out on Twitter with Kansas State, the guard, faked like he was pulling, came out of his stance, took two steps, and came back. I don't know how you coach your linebackers to defend that, because they're taught to read their keys and things like that. Kansas State scored on eight straight possessions against Oklahoma a few weeks ago. And that's not what better athletes. They've got some tremendous coaches over there. And, things start with stopping the run, but part of their run game is part of their scheme. And, I'm going to be interested to see how Texas does against that.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. And I think one of the big parts of stopping that run is making sure that you do funnel them toward your big guys up front, like Keiondre Coburn and Mora Ojemo. And that starts by setting the edge. You have to be able to force them in. What that does by setting the edge, and you have to do that with your cornerbacks and your nickelback and your rover, that's your B linebacker. That's how those are the guys who are setting the edge. Those guys have to be on their game to make sure that guys like Harry Trotter, Skylar Thompson do not escape outside. If they are, then you're in for a world of hurt, like what you happened against TCU. That's when Texas stopped being able to set the edge against TCU, that's when TCU's run game started to expand and get better. If Texas can figure out how to set a hard edge against Kansas State, then that will go leaps and bounds towards stopping their run game.
Another part, I think, because Kansas State uses, they'll line up in I formation, they'll line up in a shotgun. I think when they get in second and medium, third and medium situations, they're going to run play action. I think a key to the game Saturday would be, can Texas limit those tight ends in the passing game and the short passes, those passes out to the flats off of play action. Can the first guy make the tackle? Okay. And right. if they're able to do that, they can get Kansas State off the field. Cause part of what Kansas State does as well, they don't do big plays really. They do just enough to keep the chains moving, wear you down 10 plays, 11 plays, and they're going to hold the ball. So if Texas can't hang on to the ball Saturday, if they can't get Kansas State off the field, they're going to stay on the field all freaking day. And it's going to be a real short ball game.
Take the under on this game for sure. You're right. These two teams love to grind down their opponents with runs and 12 play drives that average, five minutes, something like that. But yeah. And you're right on the tackling. It doesn't have to be taking them down with the first hit, but at least holding them back, holding them down. If they do get a catch in the open field, you don't have to take them down immediately, but at least holding on to them till help gets there.
Yeah, you don't worry about the big play with Kansas State. If you can get them for a tackle for loss, if you can get them for behind schedule, I don't really think their offense is designed to get those yardage back up that they lost. So I think a big thing for Texas will be TFLs, disruption. Can Keiondre Coburn get in the backfield? Can that'll go a long ways towards them, their defense having a nice showing this weekend.
Right. You're going to want a guy like Keiondre Coburn, as you said, or Joseph Osai to have a big game here in the backfield. If they do, mm-hmm. then that's going to be awesome for Texas. And one thing that you're going to have to do is make sure that they have no other options. And that's going to be by shutting down a guy like Dalton Schoen, who has been by far their best receiving threat and he's just so sneaky. You watch him on tape and you watch him in games and you're watching this guy and you're like, how in the world is this guy getting open and making these plays? He is just a very sneaky dude. He's able to just run routes very well, find the soft spots in zones, and then is very sure-handed when it comes to catching the ball.
Yeah, if you will go back and watch the Texas and Kansas State game from last year, he was slipping behind the defense. He beat Texas deep on one play where he had the safety's bite on the fake. He dropped a touchdown pass in that game last year. But like you said, he's a guy that just, he's decent size, about 6'1", 6'2". Not a small guy, but he's not a fast guy. He's not sudden, but he's one of those guys that understands the nuance of the position. He's not as explosive as Texas has seen better receivers this year. But when Skylar Thompson does break the pocket on Saturday, showing the type of guy that they've got a chemistry, he's the kind of guy that's got savvy to find holes in the zone and things like that and just kill you slowly.
Right, exactly. So making sure that when Skylar Thompson does break that pocket, or when he does have some extra time in that pocket, as he probably will, making sure that you keep tab on Dalton Schoen and where he is and understand what he's doing. because, like you said, if you don't, he will kill you slowly and mm-hmm. allow Kansas to attack you even more with the run because of that threat of the pass. Mm-hmm. It's just the dual nature of offense, you know. If you get the pass going, the run works. And if you get the run going, the pass works, right?
Absolutely. But
let's go ahead and get on to the offensive side of the ball. Darius, what is your key to the game for the offense?
I would say offensively, I would say they need to break some tendencies this week. Let's come out and throw the ball on first down. Let's not throw it side to side. Let's go over the middle. Let's come out play action on the first play. Do things to try to not even stay on schedule. I would say do things to break tendencies this week. Kansas State's going to come in ready to fight. They're a tough program. We've mentioned every week folks get up for Texas, but Kansas State, they get up for everybody. They're going to come bring you their best shot. I would say if Texas can win the turnover battle and break some tendencies this weekend, that'll go a long ways towards some positive a positive outcome.
Yeah, I would agree. Coming out and breaking tendency on first down, but making sure that you stay on schedule. I think staying on schedule is a huge thing for this Texas offense. If they can do that, then it goes a long way in winning the game, because the one thing that Texas offense relies on is efficiency. So not being pass heavy on first and second down, I think, is going to be huge. Yes, at times break tendency, but making sure that you are efficient in your first and second downs, making sure that you aren't losing yards or aren't getting 1 to 2 yards, slant routes or finding ways to get the running game working are going to be huge. And in that, I think one thing that's breaking tendency, and I'll agree with you here, that they need to do is a lot more motion, helping out your offensive line and your running backs and your quarterback with more creative play calling, because you can do that with this offense. These guys, you don't have to run the exact same three plays every single drive. You can have some motion in there. You can have some crazy play calls in there that make a defense guess and allow for your offensive line and your running backs and quarterback and wide receivers to take advantage of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, we talked about it prior to the show, but Kansas State's going to be without their top defensive back, cornerback A.J. Parker. Texas has to take advantage of his replacement. The guy that's expected to replace him is number 21, Darrell Patterson. Patterson's a JUCO transfer from Northeastern Oklahoma A&M. He's listed at 5'10", 174 pounds. So you know he's probably about 5'9", 170 pounds, 165 pounds. Texas has got guys out there like Colin Johnson, Malcolm Epps, Brandon Eagles, who's 6'4", 220. They've got to take advantage of that size advantage. And if Kansas State is forced to give that guy help over the top, that just takes another guy out of the box and helps the run game. So Texas has got to get after Darrell Patterson, number 21. 21 is the guy you should be looking for on Saturday defensively for Kansas State.
Right, and sticking with the theme of the passing game, Texas needs to spread the ball out. That was a huge issue for against TCU. Texas only had Colin Johnson and Devin Duvernay, and what that caused is them to be very much focused on in the second half, and Sam Ehlinger having to throw into double coverage or find other guys. They need to have Brandon Eagles out there making plays. They need to have Jake Smith catching the ball. That will, one, give Sam Ehlinger some more options to spread the ball out and then take the pressure off of guys like Devin Duvernay and Colin Johnson. They can do it if they need to. I mean, they have 300 yards. But they're going to be so much more effective if they don't have three guys hanging on top of them.
Yeah, something I don't think we mentioned last week. I didn't even think about it until right now. When Texas lost Cade Brewer, they didn't have him in that second half, right? Texas struggled big time offensively in the second half without him. They're without Cade Brewer for the rest of the season. So what will the offense look like without Cade Brewer? Now you're relying on Reese Letow, Jarrett Wiley. Do you burn Braden Leibach's red shirt? I think he's only played in one game, maybe two games. He's got a couple games he can give you. But what type of formations will they be able to use? What will they be effective? Who's the extra guy that's going to be in there for the run game? Texas has some questions to answer offensively. Losing Cade Brewer was big. So how do you replace Cade Brewer's presence in offense? Because leaving Letow out there 80% of the time like Brewer is not the answer. And if they do that, they're going to be putting themselves at a huge disadvantage on Saturday. And they'll deserve whatever happens. They will deserve what happens and I will my confidence in the coaching staff, I'll no longer be able to defend them.
Right, because they're playing 10 against 11 at that point.
Yes, yes, you don't have to cover him.
Right. So that's gonna. So those are our keys to the game. Darius, I'll let you bow out here. So now we're joined by Grant from Bosco's Boys. Grant, how you doing up there? You in Kansas?
Is that where you are? I am. I'm in Kansas City, Missouri, pretty close to the border, but I'm doing well. It's dark outside, though.
Yeah, it sucks.
Very
Daylight
dark.
Savings time is the worst. But I do have a quick question before we get started with the Kansas State talk. What is the Bosco's Boys? Who is Bosco? Is that the dog?
Come on, man. Come on, man. We explained this to you when we had you on.
It's been a year.
That's true. So Bosco the dog is K-State's very first mascot. Like back before we were – when we were the Aggies, we were the Kansas State Agricultural College. So our first mascot was a black lab named Bosco. So we're just paying homage to the OG.
Hey, it's a good mascot. I love good dog mascots. But let's go ahead and get to the Wildcats team. You guys have a new coach this year. You're now under Chris Klieman. What has changed under him? What does he bring on and off the field that is different from last year's staff?
Man, it's night and day difference. But, I mean, you could say it's a little reminiscent of, you know, Bill Snyder's first tenure in that, you know, he's just preaching consistent improvement, attacking each day, hammering the details. But I think the biggest difference is the players now have a much bigger voice. One of the first things Klieman said when he came and took over the program was that, you know, this is the kids' team. This is their program. I'm here to lead, but, you know, I'll step back when I need to. I'll step in when I need to. So he just immediately came in, changed the culture, made people feel a lot more comfortable, modernized a lot of things that were definitely lacking. So, and I think he's just a hell of a football coach. So, you know, he's won 7 national championships, you know, at the FCS level, and you don't do that with, you know, not knowing a thing or two about football. So a lot of things have changed. It feels like a breath of fresh air. So it's nice.
Right. I had a hypothesis before they came to KSU, the Kansas State. How do you, I don't know if you say KSU. You probably never say KSU. Anyways, before they went to Kansas State, I had a hypothesis that bringing the NDSU staff to any college football in the next level would probably be a good idea. And I wish I would have been a little bit more vocal with that before they joined and started doing well. But, man, it's been pretty much similar to what they pulled off at NDSU. Not quite at the same, you know, clip. They're not a Bama yet. You know, you're
sure.
Hoping. But
that would be nice.
It's been pretty consistent there. And that offense has been pretty efficient. That has been sort of the mark of that offense. They don't have any busted drives. They don't give the ball up much, but they're also not very explosive. What has been new about this offense this year? Because that sounds pretty similar to what y'all had last year.
Right. Again, it is similar to years past, you know, run heavy, want to own the time of possession, pass opportunistically. But I think the biggest difference can be found just probably in the trenches. You know, we're running a lot of A-gap power, pulling guards as opposed to, you know, just blocking zones. And we've been really creative with how we've been able to use different schemes in the run game to keep defenses confused. Also, you know, incorporating a lot of tight end, a lot of fullback as well. I've been really, really impressed. You're right. I think bringing a lot of that North Dakota State staff would be beneficial anywhere. But I've been impressed with Courtney Messingham, offensive coordinator, with how he's been able to keep a very wide variety of different schemes to confuse defenses.
Yeah, and the guy who's really been helping them make it happen is the quarterback, Skylar Thompson, the dual threat with his arm and his legs. Really more so his legs. What do we get out of Skylar Thompson? How has he looked this year compared to last year, which was a little bit more of a mess?
Well, yeah. I think the biggest noticeable difference between last year and this year is that he's not having to play these psychological mind games with the head coach and be looking over his shoulder every play for, you know, whether or not he's going to get yanked or not. You know, he was battling with Alex Delton for the starting spot basically start to finish last year. And it was a lot of it was pretty pointless. I think the writing was on the wall for quite some time that Skyler was the better option, and to a lot of people's confusion, it just dragged on. But I think he's looked really good. Started off the year really hot. He had the number one QBR in the nation after like three games. He took a little bit of a step back after losing to Oklahoma State and Baylor. But, you know, since then, the storyline is that he's really been dominant on the ground, like you said. We all saw him, you know, gash Oklahoma for four rushing touchdowns. He did it against TCU the week prior, and he just ran for 127 yards and in three touchdowns against KU last week. I think he's been really good. He's very dangerous on the run, obviously, and I think he's a good, solid passer, and he has the capability to shred secondaries, you know, in the passing game if he's given the opportunity. You know, he's done it. He did it as a freshman at number 10 Oklahoma State, passed for like four touchdowns, 45 points. So he's, you know, he's a former four-star guy. He's got the pedigree. He's a good passer if he needs to be, but right now he's just managing the game and running the ball really well.
Yeah, and running the ball is Kansas State's thing, especially this year. The running attack has been pretty darn efficient. Even losing James Gilbert, who I fell in love with when he was a grad transfer, that dude, y'all picked him up pretty fast, and I was like, oh, man, what a grab. But y'all have lost your starting two running backs. How is Harry Trotter? How do you expect Harry Trotter to do? And do you think this running attack will still be as efficient? What is it? Is it because of the running backs or the offensive line?
So I'll talk about you know, the running backs as a whole in a second, but a little interesting tidbit about, you know, James Gilbert and Chris Klieman really is that, you know, I don't know if you know this, but before Chris Klieman arrived, we had zero scholarship running backs, and he went out and he got nine that span. Yeah, I mean, unbelievable. James Gilbert, excellent player. You know, he went and got Jordan Brown in the grad transfer market. I think we got like five freshman running backs. Really, really impressive. But for me, you got to give it to the offensive line. They've just been so dominant. And like I said, aside from those two blips against Oklahoma State and Baylor, the running game success, you know, it has to be credited to them. But, you know, we do have that stable of running backs that can get the job done, starting with James Gilbert, the transfer from Ball State. He's gotten the most carries this year. He's more of that, you know, downhill, powerful, tough runner. Behind him is probably, in my opinion, our best and most versatile running back in Jordan Brown, former four-star guy, grad transfer from North Carolina. He's much more elusive. You know, he's very good in the receiving game, excellent blocker, got a little more speed. But with those two guys together, they make a really great tandem.
Are they going to be playing?
I think so. But I'd be remiss not to mention Harry Trotter, very serviceable back. He's seems to clearly be third in the pecking order, but we rotate so much that, you know, he gets a decent bulk. And last week, obviously, against KU, Gilbert and Brown did not play, so he got all the bulk of the carries, ran for 92 yards and a touchdown, albeit it was against KU. But
KU is a good team, apparently.
Hey, you got the dub. That's all that matters. But I would expect at least Jordan Brown to play. I think it's touch and go with James Gilbert, but according to him, he expects to play this weekend. So who the hell knows? Who knows? We'll see.
Right. So that offensive line has been pretty much dominant this year. Without Dalton Reisner on the squad, what has been the, you know, the thing that makes him tick?
I just interviewed Dalton Reisner about an hour ago. He was in my living room. FYI. Well,
that's pretty, you know.
He's a large man.
Not bragging or anything.
He's a very large man. Well, it was completely unexpected. It was Jesse Ertz, our former quarterback, and he was like, "Hey, Dalton Reisner's happens to be in town. He's hanging out with me. Do you want him to come?" It's like, "Yeah, sure." But anyways, where were we? I totally threw us off there.
Offensive line.
What was the question? Offensive line. What makes him tick? Probably, in my opinion, one of, if not the best offensive line coaches in the country, and Connor Riley. The schemes that Connor Riley and Coach Messingham are doing are nothing short of spectacular. And they've just gotten these guys to buy into what they're doing, and, you know, it's working really well. You know, these guys are all upperclassmen, but you know, none of them I was really expecting to be like elite offensive linemen, but they fit into the system so well, and it's been really impressive. But like I said earlier, just keeping defenses on their toes and being creative in the schemes that they're doing is what has made us very successful.
So let's go ahead and get to the passing game, because that doesn't seem to be the thing that jumps off the page when you look at Kansas State here, but it definitely is a part of their game, especially when you see guys like Dalton Schoen, who have proven to be troublesome for some defenses. He's kind of a guy who's, I described earlier in the show, as a sneaky dude. how will they be used this Saturday?
I expect to see, you know, a lot of play action, but I'm glad you mentioned Dalton Schoen first, because I feel like he's massively underrated. You know, we're talking about a walk-on guy turned scholarship and who's now top 20 all-time in receiving yards at K-State in some pretty dang good company. So he's certainly our most experienced guy, and he constantly comes up big for us. But, you know, we seem to distribute the ball a lot to a lot of different receivers. I think against Oklahoma, we had hit 7 different guys. Against KU, it was something similar. But in my opinion, and I mean, not even in my opinion, it's our best deep threat is Malik Knowles. He's a redshirt freshman. He's got probably the best big play ability. The receiving core just does not tick without him on the field. And luckily, he is healthy now. He missed the game at Oklahoma State. He had 3 plays against Baylor and then re-aggravated his injury. But I think he's kind of off of his snap count now. And with him on the field, we have that deeper threat that kind of forces defenses to be a little more honest.
So let's play some role. Let's do some role play here. That sounded very awful, but in football terms, let's not take it there. You're Todd Orlando. Poor you. I'm sorry. If you were Todd Orlando, though, how would you attack this offense? Where would you attack them? Where are they weak?
Okay, so if I were a defensive coordinator, I mean, I'd probably dare us to pass, basically. Load the box, probably play tight coverage, press a lot, make us beat you with the pass, which is obviously a lot more difficult for us, something we're capable of doing, especially when we're healthy. But that's probably the strategy I would go with. I'm not sure how we will attack Texas, but if I'm the DC, I'm loading the box and I'm forcing K-State to pass.
So you don't know how they're gonna attack Texas? How does Kansas State normally attack a team?
I mean, it seems like Texas' weakest point is probably the secondary. Correct me if I'm wrong, but
the linebackers, yeah.
Yeah, primarily, obviously, we're a power running team, but you know, Courtney Messingham's been great. He's been very creative in the last 3 weeks, so I'm sure he's got some tricks up his sleeve. But I think we're going to kind of just stick with our identity and go from there. I think if you know, we're gonna say, hey, if you stop the run game, then we're gonna have to go to Plan B. But I think it's gonna start with that A-gap power run game. We're going to go from there.
Right, and before you came on, Darius and I did our keys to the game, and I want to reiterate, I think the team that wins this side of the battle is going to be the one that controls the edge of the offensive line, the line of scrimmage. If one of these teams can control the edge, meaning, you know, they can turn the corner or they can control the corner, box in or keep open that edge, then they're going to win, whichever team does that. So let's go ahead and switch to the defensive side of the ball, though. What is the primary goal of the defense every game? Because that's climbing side of the ball. What has his main philosophy been?
Oh, brother. I'm not a football guru by any means, but you know, this year, schematically, it seems much less conservative, a lot less contained. You know, we're pressing more, we're swarming to the ball really well, we're keeping we're disguising blitzes very well, we're blitzing often. Number 2 in the nation on third down defense, and that's been a staple for us, being able to get that defense off the field and stay fresh. I think Scotty Hazleton is our defensive coordinator. I think he's done an outstanding job at just being very creative and having a lot of really good defensive schemes that are disguised. We saw it last weekend against KU where looked like we were bringing pressure and then floated the linebacker to the right, kind of gave away this – gave away the passing lane from the corner, but kind of snuck that linebacker out and floated it out. And Carter Stanley just didn't see him at all through one of the easiest picks you'll ever see in the linebacker. So we see a lot of that stuff. Just great disguises, blitzing a lot more than we've seen in the past, and that press coverage is probably the biggest difference.
And probably what's helped Klieman ease into this Kansas State role is the veteran presence in this defense. This defensive front seven is just chock full of seniors, senior transfers, redshirt seniors, redshirt juniors. If there's a freshman or even a sophomore in that front seven or the starting front seven. I can't see it. I don't see it. So how has this front seven, this presence, veteran presence up on the up front, played out on the field?
Well, let me correct you. The best, probably the best of our D linemen is a sophomore. It's Wyatt Hubert. He is a stud top to bottom. He was a freshman All-American last year, and he's basically picked up where he left off. He's starting to roll right now. Defenses are going to try to key on him, or offenses are going to want to key on him for sure. And when he's playing well, it really opens up the rest of that line. But you're right, the entire line is
Wyatt Hubert.
Really Wyatt Hubert.
Let me correct you, Mr. Kansas State. He's a redshirt sophomore.
Okay, there we go. The line, you're right, is really solid. Possibly, in my opinion, this could be the best line in the conference. You know, our players. We had a couple of players that were saying that Big 12 Media Days, and I was like, I don't know if I quite buy that. Iowa State's got a pretty good D line. Baylor's looking to have a really good D line, but it's at least top three for me. And I think, you know, Scott and I, my co-host, we've criticized this strategy a little bit, but I think it's honestly what's led to a lot of success of that line. Just outside of just having talented guys, Klieman and Hazleton like to rotate a lot, and you're going to notice that the line rotates quite a bit to keep the guys fresh and just throwing a lot of different looks at some offenses with some jet packages. But if we want to be successful Saturday, yeah, it's going to start at that D line.
Right. And those linebackers as well, Daquan Patton is coming in and he is just kind of taken off, him and Elijah Sullivan as well. What have they been? Kind of Kansas State's, their bread and butter has usually been those linebackers. What have they been bringing to this team?
They've been good, not great, just real solid. Had some tackling issues early on that's progressively, I think, getting a little bit better. But they've been very serviceable, and they rotate a lot too. I think Daniel Green, he's a redshirt freshman. There you go. Redshirt freshman who has gotten, you know, as much of the snaps as Daquan Patton and Elijah Sullivan have this year. And he's got really, really high havoc rate. He's hell of an athlete, 4-star out of Utah. He was recruited by Utah. I don't know where he's from. I forgot. But he's a stud. He's super athletic. And my favorite thing about him is he always like has a million accessories on, so he looks super cool. But the linebackers, yeah, serviceable guys.
Style points count, man. Style points count.
I completely agree. But yeah, they're solid. They're solid.
Good. And the one thing that seems to be, if there is a weakness on this team, it's the cornerbacks, especially with A.J. Parker being out. Darrell Patterson, I'm not too confident in how he'll look, but it's still led by Denzel Goolsby, who is a crazy good free safety. What are you expecting out of this secondary come Saturday?
Well, you're very kind. You're very kind to the Cats. There are some weaknesses outside of the secondary, but we have experienced guys, I think, that are going to step into that role. It does hurt. Obviously, anytime you lose your best corner, that's going to hurt. But we have guys like Kevion McGee, who is a senior, who I actually personally think he's like our second best corner. I'd like to see him get more playing time, and now he's probably going to. We have a guy like Patterson that's played some decent minutes and made some big plays. But you never want to lose your best corner. It could be a point of weakness for us, certainly, this weekend. But fortunately, you know, we're not throwing a freshman into the deep end or anything like that. We have some guys that have some experience that are going to be able to step up. And yeah, it's nice having Denzel Goolsby back there, who's a senior and one of those just quarterbacks of the defense, who's a smart guy, who's got people in the right place at the right time, and that's what you're going to get out of Denzel Goolsby.
So then, if the cornerbacks aren't the weakness here, where is the weakness in this defense?
It probably is our corners. I think you're probably right. Secondary is probably our weakness. I think you could have some success there, particularly with AJ Parker out. But you know, it's not a perfect unit. It's not a perfect unit top to bottom. It's got its weaknesses. We struggle with tackling on all levels. So Texas, I think, will have some success this weekend for sure. You're not looking at you know, the Alabama Crimson Tide. But I do appreciate – I guess we are 6-2. Maybe I should start buying in a little more.
Yeah, I was about to ask you this last question here. Vegas seems to think Texas is the favorite here, where I'm a little bit on the opposite side. In fact, I threw down $22 today to win $20 on Kansas State because I don't think that Texas will be able to, if they win, beat Kansas State by 7 points. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game that is very, very close. Are you surprised by that line? By that spread? Where are you sitting on this?
I'm not surprised. I mean, I think Texas is still a good football team. It's on the road. What are you guys, 5-3?
Yep.
5-3? I mean, that's with losses to LSU, Oklahoma, and, you know, TCU. That's nothing really to be ashamed of. Texas is still a good football team, really talented. It's on the road. You know, there's still a wide talent gap between these two teams. So I'm not surprised. No, I'm not. I'm pretty nervous for this game from my perspective. So I think it's kind of a toss-up. I think it'll be a good game, but I wouldn't say I'm surprised. And I, you know, never bet on your team.
No,
that's my rule of thumb.
Bet against or bet on?
I never bet on any game that K-State is involved in ever.
Yeah, no, I usually don't. But I saw this and I was like, it's just conventional knowledge for myself, knowing what's going on. I'm like, that is too attractive to back down on that one. So
yeah,
threw money at it. But thank you, Grant, for joining me, man. It's been awesome talking to you. Where can we find you and your stuff on the internet?
Pretty much anywhere that you can listen to a podcast. We're going to probably be on that platform. The show is just Bosco's Boys, and it's Bosco's with an E. But you can find me on Twitter, Grant_KSU. You can find my co-host at Scott Wildcat, and our homepage is just Bosco's Boys.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Thank you for coming on, man.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's a good game. Talk to you later.
Hopefully. Yeah, absolutely. Take it easy. Thanks for having me on.
But that'll be your 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And Darius, welcome back. Where can we find you?
Hey, y'all can find me on Twitter at DTerrell, DTerrell05. Shoot me a comment, hit my DMs, holler at me. I love to talk to you.
Coach Reality?
Coach Reality, that's for my kids that follow me because we live in La La Land in DeSoto, Texas, where we're superstars and everything. And I'm the bad guy. I'm Mr. Reality. I have no problem doing that or being that for them.
You're the bad cop?
It later. I'm the bad cop when I need to be.
All right. And you guys can find both of us on thefootballbrainiacs.com. That is texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com, where you can get all your insider information on the team and recruiting and your analysis of the games. Some great stuff from Darius, Gabe, CJ, Super K, Charlie, all of them. It's all good stuff. And you guys can also find us and our other podcasts on the Hornscast channel. That's the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform you listen to. You can find out there. We are there. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Out.